Coleman, Mr. Burns.
May it please the court, my name is Timothy Burns for the appellant, Elizabeth Taylor. This case poses several questions. Can an ALJ base his RFC findings on only portions of a doctor's report? Must an ALJ consider all non-medical opinions? And should an ALJ take into account that ADLs completed with assistance are not the same as work? In this case, the ALJ's... activities of daily living.
Thank you.
No problem. In this case, the ALJ ignored the entirety of Dr. Barrow, the consultative examiner's report, failed to mention the findings of a case conference, omitted key details from the teacher's report, and assured us that a 19-year-old who needed reminders to use soap in the shower was capable of independent work. This is not substantial evidence. Regarding Dr. Barrow's report, an ALJ is required to mention all medical source statements in file. In this case, the ALJ not only didn't mention Dr. Barrow's finding that she would have markedly diminished concentration and working memory, he didn't mention those things, but he did consider parts of Dr. Barrow's opinion or report when he said or made his decision. Barrow noted that she had sustained focus and concentration appear markedly diminished, and that she had, quote, a markedly diminished working memory. In Campbell, this court ruled that an ALJ cannot pull certain details of a report and ignore the other parts of the report. And that's exactly what the ALJ did here. He took the full-scale IQ score of 75 and determined that that meant the person was capable of simple repetitive work. Similarly, in Varga, the court noted that simple repetitive work is not all-inclusive of all the impairments that a person might have, limitations. In this case, simple repetitive doesn't account at all for markedly diminished working memory. We know from the further evidence that I'll get to in a minute that she had problems with things like simple instructions, according to a couple different reports. Now, in this case, the commissioner argues that the ALJ didn't need to mention these findings because the ALJ relied on the findings of the reviewers for the Disability Determination Bureau. Yet the regulations require the ALJ to mention medical source statements, not these very overworked people working for the disability office. There's also a question in the briefing about whether Dr. Barrow's statements represent a finding or an opinion. 404.15.27A2 tells us, when it defines medical source statements, that those are statements which reflect judgments about the nature and severity, including symptoms and diagnosis, regarding limitations of what you can still do. Barrow's opinion here is about the nature and severity of what he determined from his testing. In the second case, and this is where we delve into more of the credibility type issues in this decision, which are manifest, the ALJ ignored the case conference and IEP meeting that Elizabeth had prior to graduation from high school. Although noted in our briefing, she didn't really graduate from high school. She thought she got a diploma, but she got a certificate of completion. He also failed to note the findings of many of the findings of Ms. Kelly, who was her teacher who completed a report. In these reports from the teachers, from the folks at school, we find that she's not independent at all in getting around day to day. She needs help picking out her clothes. She needs help doing her hair. Ms. Kelly noted that she gets tired easy and needs prompting, cannot follow simple instructions. It's also something Dr. Barrow noted. The ALJ only mentioned a few lines from Ms. Kelly's report, including the line that she's, quote, pretty independent, which the rest of Kelly's report seems to belie. He didn't mention at all the case conference. where they formed an individual educational plan, an IEP. And in that IEP, we find out that she needs walk to class, that she's, her goal is to look for a part-time job, not a full-time job. She's not on an academic graduation track. And they then set future goals for her, that she would pick out her own clothes. She would learn how to use money at a store and learn how to keep track of time so that she can complete her tasks. None of these findings appear in the ALJ's decisions. He didn't discuss any of them, and yet he assures us, again, that she's independent in her ability to do these things. This court noted in Hughes, and Judge Posner discussed it earlier today, that ADLs, activities of daily living, cooking, cleaning, are not the same as work. And yet here we find that the fact that she can make macaroni and cheese, do some vacuuming around the house with her mother's help, we find that these are the things that the ALJ credits with her supposedly being able to work. It seemed to me that she was being punished for having a support system. She has a librarian where she does the volunteer work. She has a teacher.
That's an hour a week.
Right? An hour a week, yes. An hour a week where she goes in and basically, according to Elizabeth, chit-chats with the librarian. And yet with this support system, who helps her, who cares for her, the ALJ sort of, in a sense, punishes her for having that by saying, well, look, she gets stuff done, not noting that she doesn't get stuff done without other people really walking her through it. The record is full of this. She couldn't answer questions at the initial evaluation for SSA. The teachers noted she needed to walk to new classes just so she would know where the class was and could participate. Dr. Barrow, as I said, noted problems following simple instructions. And at the hearing, and the ALJ gives, and the appellee, gives a lot of credit to the fact that she answered questions. But she didn't answer those questions correctly often. She indicated that she graduated from high school when she didn't. She indicated she didn't know how tall she was or how much she weighed.
I gather she's pretty cooperative and compliant. Is that?
From being at that hearing, I would say yes. She is. She's a remarkably nice young woman. I think that comes through in the testimony that she was trying to be as helpful as possible when she was answering these questions. She admitted to not knowing how to text, not knowing how to mail a letter, not knowing how to not understanding money, and needing help from her mom to shampoo her hair, to cook macaroni and cheese, and to perform simple household tasks. So every adult in file in this case notes that she has problems completing things independently. Ms. Morales, the librarian, she wouldn't even give her more than the hour a week. The case conference said she should have a goal of part-time work, but she should still live at home. And Ms. Kelly noted that her mother has to do her hair and pick out her clothes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burns. Ms. Siegel?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Siegel. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. The ALJ considered a variety of different reports and evidence in assessing Taylor's
functioning. So is it your view that because she works 1 hour a week in the library, she can work 40 hours a week in the library?
Your Honor, the ALJ considered the
answer my question.
The ALJ didn't use
it. Is that your view?
No, that's not.
I'm asking you your view.
No, that's not my view.
If she can work 1 hour a week in a library, she can work 40 hours a week in a library.
No, that's not the
what
the ALJ
found. All
right, so
what can she do?
The ALJ found that she could do simple repetitive tasks.
What's a machine feeder?
A machine feeder is a one-step job that the vocational expert identified as
what is it?
It is basically what you would think it is. It's a machine. You take one
no
thing
idea
and feed
what
it into.
Is. I've never heard the term. What's the machine?
Well, the DOT describes it as a job that you take an object and you feed it into the machine. It's something basically that starts an automated production. The production doesn't start
so
on its own. The person
careful,
has to feed something into it.
The machine eats your hand, or what?
No, not in this particular instance, because the vocational expert actually considered dangerous hazards to not, you know.
All it says, all the ALJ says, is machine feeder. Okay.
And there are about 4,000 jobs, so there's a lot of different types.
It says at the medium exertional level. Is she capable of a medium exertional level?
She's probably capable of more than that. Well, there aren't any doctors that limit her to less than a medium level. In fact, the doctor that did an assessment of her physical capacity found she didn't have any exertional restrictions based on an impairment. Now, we're not talking about her body habitus as a 5'4", 130-pound woman, whether she can do medium work. It's whether her impairments cause a restriction to less than
medium
work.
Wait, I don't understand. You're saying
when you're considering,
we don't know whether she's capable of this work?
No, we do know. When she went through an evaluation, a physical evaluation, the examination findings.
Well, what is it you feed into a machine?
It could be a piece of paper. It could be a wire. It could be, something that you're laminating. There are any number of different types of machine feeder jobs. There were 4,000 of the vocational
experts. But there's nothing here which says that she can only feed particular types of stuff into little machines.
Well, the vocational expert did talk about the machine feeder job as being something that accommodated the restrictions that the ALJ set forth. And those included quite a few restrictions that were not just from medical reports. They were also
from
her teacher evaluations.
What's an assembler?
An assembler?
That's the second job that the ALJ mentioned, vocational
expert. It's a factory-type job where they put things together.
What in her background suggests that she can assemble stuff in a factory, work in a factory?
Again, we're talking about a one-step job.
In a factory?
And is there any indication that she can maintain focus on a task for more than an hour without supervision to keep that focus?
The assessment that was done by the state agency psychologist found that she could sustain focus long enough to do complete tasks.
Did that psychologist examine her?
No, he based the findings on evaluations from her teachers and from statements that she made, and then also from
the examining physician. Why is she working just 1 hour
report?
If she has this capacity, 1 hour a week? Why is she just working 1 hour a week? You are thinking of her as being able to work 40 hours a week, aren't you?
Yes.
Now, as being a machine feeder, is that less or more strenuous than doing whatever she does in an hour for once, whatever she does in the library?
Strenuous in terms of physical capacity? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yes, because it's classified at a higher exertion level. I would imagine her library job. Well, actually, though, she said she stacked books on shelves and things too, so it might be about the same because she, in addition to putting labels on things, she used.
Yes, but there's a difference between doing something an hour a week and 40 hours a week.
Certainly, Your Honor, and that's why
it's
when
a 40-fold difference.
Right, when the ALJ considered
that. You think she could work in a library 40 hours a week?
That's not what the vocational expert testified about. The vocational expert testified about.
I'm asking you, do you think she can work 40 hours a week in a library?
It doesn't matter what I think.
I'm asking you. Matters to me. So you tell me what you think.
Possibly, yes. I think she could. I mean,
why did he list that as a job?
Because he was relying on vocational expert testimony, not on.
I know. Why didn't the vocational expert say, "Well, look, she can.
Well, the
if she can work, if you can be a medium." A machine feeder.
The
work in a factory all day.
Yeah,
surely you can work in a library all day.
The claimant's attorney didn't ask the vocational expert about the library job, so that's why there wasn't any testimony about it by the vocational expert. The vocational expert was asked a hypothetical question with lots of restrictions, including a restriction to an academic level of fourth or fifth grade. And
are you saying that her lawyer asked about whether she could be a machine feeder?
The ALJ asked a hypothetical question to the vocational expert, and then she identified a job.
You're not answering my question. You said the claimant.
You asked me whether
the claimant asked about the machine feeder.
The claimant's attorney did not ask whether the library job could be performed at 40 hours. The testimony.
But given that it's her only work, why wouldn't you expect a vocational expert to say, well, of course, she can be a machine reader, machine feeder, etc., and of course, she can just work in the library.
The ALJ considered the...
I'm asking you why the vocational expert didn't mention the library as a job for her.
Because he was not asked about it, or she was not asked about it. She was not asked about...
So why didn't the administrative law judge ask him about it? Because that's her only job.
He was not equating the job of a librarian that she did for 1 hour with full-time work.
But if she,
as a way of considering whether she was able to follow directions.
But look, we're talking about 40-hour a week jobs.
Right.
Now, if she can work 40 hours a week in a factory, why can't she work with no experience in factory work? Why can't she work 40 hours a week in a library?
There's no indication that she didn't work 40 hours a week in a library because she was unable to. She was working 1 hour a week in a library because it was a volunteer position that she got through, like, her high school's vocational rehabilitation program.
So it wasn't even a real job.
Could I ask you a couple questions about the ALJ's opinion?
Yes.
I'm troubled that he referred to Ms. Taylor as a male at a couple of points, which at least makes me worry.
Makes me worry
about how much attention was paid. I understand that this is a high-volume operation, but it troubles me. I'm also troubled by the references to her as a high school graduate. She testified she's a high school graduate.
Correct.
No real comment on that. And then on the last page of the opinion about the vocational expert opinion, taking into account that the claimant is a high school graduate that may have lower levels of reading and math. That seems like an extraordinary exaggeration of her ability and understatement of her impairments.
Your Honor, the teacher evaluation talked about her being at the in the 12th grade. She finished high school, but that she
attended
doing reading
high
and math
at the 4th and 5th grade levels, correct?
She's doing instructional level at 4th, 5th, and 7th grade levels. And the ALJ included that 4th and 5th grade level in the hypothetical question to the vocational expert to make sure that the vocational expert understood the extent of her limits. He did not say that she was at a high school level in academic instruction. It was completed 12 years of education, had 4th and 5th grade levels that were considered for math and reasoning.
So what was the relevance of her being a high school graduate?
The ability to show up and complete a program. I mean, that is relevant.
Here's what that teacher said. Lizzie's family still helps her get ready each day for school. She doesn't even know how to match her clothes or put up her hair.
That's right. And that's something that her teacher said when she was in high school when she was 17. Later on, during the testimony, when she was 19 and a little bit older, the ALJ asked her about that and asked her whether she was able to do that on her own or whether she needed a list to remember all the different grooming things that she needed to do. And she said that sometimes she needed help and sometimes she did it on her own from memory. And she testified about that a number of different activities.
Well, that's not good enough, is it?
Pardon me?
That's not good enough. If you work in a factory, you can't say, well, sometimes I can feed this stuff into the machine, and sometimes I can't.
It's a one-step job. It's the lowest level of reasoning. It's lowest level of reasoning, math, and language abilities. It's much less than doing things that are more complex, like just...
Have you ever seen a machine feeder?
I have never personally seen a machine feeder. But the vocational expert has. She had 35 years of experience, and she took into account all of the restrictions that were reasonably supported by the record, and she identified 4,000 jobs as a machine feeder
in
Indiana.
And where does that number come from?
Pardon me?
Where does that number come from?
She testified that it came from her years of experience placing jobs in jobs.
There are no statistics, though. She's guessing.
No, she said she got it from her experience.
There are no statistics. She's guessing.
She was a vocational rehabilitation
specialist.
Yeah, but
there are no statistics.
But but she actually placed people in jobs.
Yeah, but she doesn't know whether there are 4,000 jobs.
No, she said she did. That was her testimony, that she had 35 years of
experience. Do you know anything about how the vocational experts operate and how they make their recommendations and what access they have to statistics?
Yes, Your Honor, I actually do, because I attended a conference in October that had vocational experts that talked about what they rely on. And they actually do work as rehabilitation counselors in the field, and they place people in actual jobs.
No, the question
and they know
is
the number of factories.
How they know the number of jobs.
They know a factory has a certain number of
are
jobs.
Are published statistics?
Published in a
on
book?
These, on something like number of machine readers, feeders in a particular locale.
What this book...
Are there published statistics... on the number of job, you know, opportunities in particular locales?
I'm sure there may be.
There are Census Bureau statistics for the country as a whole.
Right, there are Census Bureau statistics, but in this particular case, she talked about her 35 years of experience.
Not for towns. You don't learn by 35 years.
The claimant lived in a suburb of Indianapolis.
Jobs or 3,000 jobs or 5,000 jobs is a machine feeder.
The claimant lived in a suburb of Indianapolis, and the vocational expert identified jobs that were in the state of Indiana, 4,000 jobs. As a vocational expert, she places people in
jobs.
How
did she derive the number 4,000?
She sees the factory, knows the number of jobs in the factories. In this particular instance, she did not testify about that because the claimant's attorney didn't ask her about it, but in other cases I have seen that the vocational experts are challenged on the jobs. They'll say, No, this factory has this many jobs. Here, the ALJ was allowed to accept the bottom line number of her 4,000 jobs that she identified because the claimant's attorney had an opportunity to challenge it. He did. He asked how she arrived at the number. She said, I used my 35 years of experience in the field, and that was accepted, and they moved on. That is allowed. That is something that, under the Donahue case, recognized this court recognized that an ALJ is allowed to accept a bottom line number from a vocational expert when there's testimony
given
about
it. We have questioned it in our cases.
I am aware of that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Siegel. And Mr. Burns, do you have anything further?
Briefly, Your Honor. The question about the VE testimony, it goes back to the Varga case that I referenced earlier. The testimony about simple repetitive tasks, even if it's limited to fifth grade, fourth grade, it's almost boilerplate in these hearings. It means almost nothing. It's just an instruction to a VE to limit stuff to SVP jobs, SVP2 or less. How that accounts for a simple repetitive limitation for a woman who can't actually independently do the things she's supposed to do, it doesn't in this case. They needed a specific vocational question, and it didn't get it. The library job was something I didn't ask about because Ms. Morales said she wouldn't give her any more time. I wouldn't ask about that at the hearing. Why would I? Could she work 40 hours a week? The person who was supervising her said she couldn't work more than 1 hour a week. So I didn't bring that up, and I think Ms. Morales is an important factor here. We are talking about the simplest work. We're talking about affixing labels. And this lady needed instructions from her mom, written instructions from her mom to remember how to do that every week. And her supervisor said, I wouldn't even give her any more time or any more responsibilities. And I think, as I thought when I was doing this case at the hearing, that is the most telling issue of all. We tried work. She couldn't do it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next.